At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
It all came together as much as it could. And now we have seven of the eight series ready.
You're back. You're back. We did a whole show without you yesterday.
You guys did?
A whole show.
You guys did a show without me?
Yep. Yep. Chris Armstrong thought the interview was fantastic. The interview, the questions were brilliant. And he only asked about you once. So
I'm glad that you mentioned that because I did listen back. And Chris was very kind, chirped me a little bit, wasn't very happy that I missed it.
You deserve to be chirped for not being there.
Well, I had duties with the day job.
I know. It's okay. We don't want to get in the way.
But the Utah conversation and with the golf tie-in, that was cool. I didn't know the backstory with you and Chris either. So that was a fun listen. If you missed the bonus episode, go back. There's a lot of different tentacles to that conversation.
Okay, so now today was designed for you. Okay?
Really?
This was designed for you. This is supposed to be a show for Millard. Okay?
Stephen Valquette from Clearside Analytics, MSG commentator, former National Hockey League goaltender, and he is the smartest person in goaltending, not named Kevin Woodley, from InGoal Magazine. And
way to sit in the fence.
No, Woodley's my buddy, and I'm a long admirer of Stephen Valquette. But here's the thing about Valquette: you don't have to be a goalie to enjoy what he will tell us. You will learn a lot today about all aspects of the game. Now, a lot of it's centered on scoring and taking advantage of a goaltender or a goaltender being good in a certain spot. But boy, oh boy, does he find a way to educate the world.
We're going to pre-scout the Stanley Cup playoffs. How's that?
Seven of eight series are determined. So who has the advantage? Connor Hellebuyck's the best goaltender in the game.
Yep.
Does that mean the Jets are flying into a long run, or will past history raise its ugly head? Oh. It's Stephen Valquette.
Remember, it's the Four Nations matchup again. Binnington versus Hellebuyck. So
he's standing by. Stephen Valquette on the way on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. This is going to be so much fun.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Just a feeling of calm comes over me right now. We get to talk goaltending. I'm sorry, John, but you don't get to talk for the next, I don't know, 25 minutes. I apologize.
I kind of expected that. I really did it, you know. And you goalers, as Cliff Fletcher would call you, you goalers stick together, you know.
That's what John Brophy called me.
Did he? Goaler? Yeah.
No, didn't call Johnny, didn't call me by my name the entire season, just goaler.
It'll show up on the YouTube shorts and the different little segments that we'll put out. But you've got a good setup back there. Stephen Valiquette joins us on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. We got some masks. We got Emmys. We got figurines. You're
good.
That's
a big part of goaltending, guys. You've got to self-promote, right? It's a big.
and you have your Hockey Night in Canada towel, which yes, obviously. Which you were obviously presented after a game because, you know, we just didn't give those out willy-nilly, you know.
I was so proud of that night. That was my first night in Toronto with all my family and friends there. I was thrilled. It was one of those. It was actually during the Hall of Fame night. And, John, it was my first start of the season in the 16th game of the season, and I hadn't received my notice yet to get an apartment. I had to play well in that game. We ended up winning it, and the rest is history. I got to be a Ranger.
That damn Henrik always wanted to play, right?
Yeah. I remember Harry Neal was interviewing Tom Rennie before the game, John, and he said, yes, Valiquette will be the starter, and he brought his hand up to his chest with his fingers crossed. And Harry told me about that before the game, and I was like, oh, thanks, Harry. Again, like I just need people to know that I'm the biggest hockey fan and obsessed with hockey from Toronto. So when I'm hearing that from Harry Neal before the game, you can imagine how I felt.
Were you thinking about the apartment thing at all during that start?
Darren, every day I came home from practice, my wife would say to me, did you get the slip yet? I was like, honey, I'll let you know when I get permission to buy an apartment here, okay? And man, it was so stressful. I can tell you that first game in Toronto, the hoops I had to go through, when we came in the night before, Brendan Shanahan used to do this thing where he'd stand up at the back of the bus and he'd say, you know, I used to kiss this girl behind this school as we drive by this school coming down the 427. And he'd do this whole narration of like his childhood in Toronto. And at one point he says, hey, Henrik, who's starting tomorrow? And Henrik and I sit beside each other and he turns around and he goes, Valley's playing. And then the bus goes, ooh, and Shanny goes, oh, Matt Sundin's going to be licking his chops tomorrow. As the story went, the final shooter in the shootout that night was Matt Sundin, and I knew he was going to go high glove, so I baited him, made the save, and Brendan Shanahan was the first guy to congratulate and say to me, I knew you had it, Valley. It was wild.
So you baited, so you hold your glove lower and try to give it to him, and then...
Darren, I've been watching Sundin my entire life. I knew he was going high glove on this breakaway. So I drop it about 6 inches and I just cocked it. And as soon as it went off his stick, I didn't even see the puck. I just went for it and I got a good piece of it.
So if he went blocker, you were still moving
dead,
your glove?
Dead. Five hole dead, low blocker dead. I had no shot. But I'll tell you what, everybody knew how much was on my shoulders for this game. And when I came in the locker room, it was Hall of Fame night. It was Messier. It was Graves. It was everybody in the locker room gave me a standing ovation. And it was one of those, you know, post-game moments that I'll never forget. And then I got the towel. And I got to tell you guys, I always found a way when my back was up against the wall. So that was probably the best situation I could have been in.
Am I allowed to speak now?
You can. but make it quick, okay? Make it quick.
Yeah. Listen to you two guys. It's like the kids in the back of in grade three in the back of the classroom, you know?
Yeah.
So, Stephen, you are here for one reason, and that is to talk about goaltending matchups in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And the great thing is, after last night, we know almost everyone. And the one that's at the top of my list is one that we've seen already this year, and that's Jordan Binnington versus Connor Hellebuyck. Yeah. Won't that be something to watch?
Yeah, it will be. You know what, John? I think it's the worst matchup for Winnipeg too, because St. Louis, the way they play. No, I mean it. It's a funny thing. Hellebuyck's stats this year. He has Vezina level stats, underlying numbers that support everything that we see above the surface. He is the best goalie since Shesterkin 3 years ago on the grade A's, high danger save percentage. He's just been lights out. A big part of that is because Winnipeg's really good at taking away time and space. So imagine that a backdoor pass with three skaters on you versus nobody on you, and you've got room to manipulate your shot and get it off and elevate it. Well, he plays in a really good environment, but the one caveat to this is he has the third lowest save percentage on the mid-danger. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen. So a mid-danger is more like a layered screen from the point, a simple deflection, a broken play from a point shot. And what I've been able to see is that because of where he struggles, and it happens to be where St. Louis's strengths lie, I think this is going to be a bit of a coin flip series more than it's going to be heavily weighted towards Winnipeg. As much as I love Winnipeg because of how they defend and their overall team, I think that Connor's, you know what a good comparison would have been was McKinnon's goal at the Four Nations on Connor Hellebuyck, where he rolled up top and he shot it through the screen. It was the same way that Colorado gave him fits last year in the first round. And it was, everything was from up top and it was coming through garbage. And I think that's the one area that Connor Hellebuyck can get bitten. But as far as Binnington, I've always believed in him. And I know that he's got the shenanigans around the game. And I think he just does that to fire himself up because he knows that he plays better angry. And I think he plays better when his back is up against the wall. And I know that from my own, at least, playing career, I was never good when I was complacent. And I don't think that Binnington plays well complacent, but I think he plays really well when he's pressured. And I think this will bring out the best in him.
But you do an amazing job explaining analytics to us non-analytics guys. But does he have a predictable book when it comes to analytics, Binnington? Connor, I could see Connor Hellebuyck having a predictable book. I don't see Binnington having one.
No, the funny thing about Binnington is up until this year, he was top five almost every year over the last five. He's always been right there, and he's a really good rush goaltender. He's very good off the rush. This year was an off year for him before the Four Nations, and then obviously they went off. He carried that coming back. And I think that, you know, knowing him, he probably felt like, how can I win the Four Nations and not get this team into the playoffs? Like, it would take away from what I did. And again, I think that he knows how to just put it together. And the book on him is, it's not as easy as the other goalies. Some goalies are easy pre-scouts. And the way I look at a pre-scout oftentimes is, where does a team have their strengths offensively? Where does the opponent struggle defensively? And does the goalie line up with those deficiencies? And I mean, I do it every night for Ranger games, and it just kind of carries over into everything else I do. And then I just watch a ton of video. Like, yeah. when I joined the Rangers, John, we had the lockout 04-05, and Benoit Lair, he gave me 10 VHS tapes of Sean Burke. And he said to me, going into that lockout year where we were in Hartford playing in the AHL, and we knew we weren't going to go up or anywhere for that matter. But he said, if you can learn how to play these sequences off the rush, in zone, the way Sean Burke did, when he gets to his post, when he challenges, you'll play in the NHL someday. And I took those VHS tapes, and this is before Apple was even popular, and I went to the West Farms Mall in Hartford, and I got a converter that I could put the VHS into and then ingest it into my own computer, and I can edit video. So, I mean, I've been doing this since I was in my early 20s, and it's just become the way that I've been able to speak. And oftentimes when I talk to NHL people, John, the coaches speak their own language, the data guys speak math, and the GMs speak video. So you've got to be able to speak all three languages or you can't get through.
How do I speak to Berkey about that when I see him in a couple of days, how he inspired you or got you through that?
Oh, I have not told him that story. And I,
really?
And I wish there was once, I want to say 5 years ago, where I just cold called him and we reached out to do a presentation, and we never were able to line it up. And it was right around COVID is when it was. But I would love to get in touch with him. So maybe you can connect us, Darren, but that's, It was Sean Burke. If not for Sean Burke and those tapes that I got from Allaire, because it was his time with him in Phoenix. Where remember how Burke had that resurgence and he was just took off in Phoenix? He changed his game and I changed mine. And a lot of the genesis of this company came from that season, because I had Nick Fetillo was our defensive coach. And this guy was a master level coach. I know that I had a very bad off season because I bought my first house and I was working. I had no money. I was pretty broke. I had about 40 grand to put down on this house. And I was actually threatened to get locked out going into that lockout season because I was making, I think, 175. And I just panicked all summer. I was painting. I was working on my house. I barely trained. But going into that season, our defensive system was so strong. The Royal Road that I oftentimes talk about, the line down the middle of the ice, because Nick Fetillo would come in the locker room, he'd draw it on the dry erase board, and he would say, nobody is passing across this line, and nobody will skate across this line tonight. We're keeping the play on one side of the ice. And in our D zone, at the time, this was revolutionary. We would bring our weak side winger right between the hash marks, and that guy was our safety guy. And Nicky would just be all over us about our switches, and the puck never went from one side of the ice to the other. You can look at the 2 years I was in Hartford, Darren. We had 30 shutouts in 2 years. 30 shutouts. It was remarkable. But my point is, I didn't just get better overnight. I was playing in a system. I led the league in save percentage because the play never went from one side of the ice to the other.
On the subject of the Winnipeg-St. Louis series, so statistically, is it an even series goaltending-wise, or does Hellebuck still have some measure of an advantage?
Okay, so I would put it to you this way. If I was putting money on it, because of betting such a big thing now, I would bet on the Jets to win, because overall their body of work just speaks for itself. Defensively, best team in the league, amazing at shutting down the rush game. Hellebuck's a great rush, save percentage goalie. But I think, if you have a strong pre-scout, an NHL goalie should never steal a series in 2025. We're way past that. We've got way too much information now. And I think that most coaches are progressive enough to allow freedom in the slot area to not just shoot to score, where it's not your best chance. Now, shoot to score from the slot all day long if there's time and space. But if people are clamping down on you and you can fan out at the net, the pass is better. A 75% shot off of goalie's pads from the slot area to create a rebound to the weak side is better. A pass off a broken play can be better. If a goalie slides over on a strong side rebound and he's hovering over you, don't shoot it at him. Don't just jam it in the pads. And I think we're there right now in the NHL. That's why we're seeing goal scoring climb. More teams are taking fewer restrictions away from their own players from the slot area. And I know it. I know the teams that we work with. It's 41% more east-to-west passing last year than 5 years ago, and it's up again this year.
40%?
41%, yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. And Darren, fewer shots, clear sight from the perimeter, fewer from the points. Like, God, teams know, you know, and everyone's looking for the magic number. The magic number is 7 or more high-danger chances in a game with 12 or fewer low-danger. Less feelers for the goalies. Goalies have never been required to make better saves without being warm in the game. I mean, if we took a poll of 100 goalies and we said, what's the biggest challenge of playing in the NHL right now? They would say not getting any easy ones and then facing a breakaway or a 2-on-1.
And that really, not to get off on a tangent here, but that's really the story of the NHL right now is that there aren't as many shots on goal, period. But there are a lot more scoring opportunities, quality scoring opportunities, correct?
100%. Yep. We've never seen it so high. And, you know, I think that the checking has certainly helped. You can't really clamp down on people the way you once could. And we're seeing a lot more time and space chances. And I can't stress that enough. It's not just the chance itself. For instance, every year in the NHL, the most goals that are scored are a low east to west pass that intersects the middle of the ice below the hash marks. We call that in our company anyway, a low slot line pass. But for this discussion, a low east to west. And it's just the difference between how many we're seeing now with time and space, because So through the year, guys, I wear many hats. I work with some NHL players with this data, scorers and goalies. And it's funny because I'll do a goal review with some goalies and they'll say something like, yeah, but, you know, my guys are all wide open, where when I watch Winnipeg play, that same shot comes with a player that has three players clamping down on his stick. Obviously, the one I'm facing is going to be elevated. It's a more difficult shot. The one that Hellebuck faces is going to be a hard shot on the ice, and every goalie is going to stop that as they seal. And it makes sense to me. I'm privy to that information, which it helps me with my own analysis. I just looked at this morning, and I'll share it with you guys. High danger chances with time and space. One goal every 3.1 chances when there is time and space. It's one goal every four chances without time and space. It works out to a difference of 823 goals over the course of a season. If we're comparing with time and space, without time and space on high danger chances, it's night and day. You can't even compare it.
Is that why LA has been so successful?
Yes, yes. And it's why Kemper's been so successful. Kemper right now, underlying numbers, has the best in our expected goals model, saves above the expected.
Last John year, he was stat. John loves that stat.
Is he joking with me or seriously?
No, I don't understand it, because I expect 10 goals every game. You know?
Okay. Well, you know what, John? I'll send you I'll share it with you guys at the end of every year, and I've got them for the last 5 years to the left of me, but we're working on it right now. Get ready for the end of the season. I send this out to all of our client teams, and it's just how goals are scored in the NHL. How many went on through screens, how many through deflections and broken plays and such. But it's really neat because it always lines up. And for instance, last year, the expected goals, how many goals we thought would go in, are within 99% of how many were actually scored. And the year before, 98%. So we know we're kind of hitting the mark because based on the amount of shots, we're saying that the actual at the end of the day are lining up with the expected.
Does LA's system then match up to Edmonton? Does it LA's mesh gonna, more this year?
LA is going to beat Edmonton. That's what I think is going to happen. Yeah. And I hate saying that, because at the beginning of the year, I loved Edmonton. But Kemper, I would say if you looked at his information, data, whatever you want to call it, but if you watch the video from the beginning of the season, Edmonton, they insulated him so well that it gave him enough time through October and November to just buy into the system. And I can't express this enough. A 2-on-1 in the first 3 weeks of the season, if you know that your players, your teammates are tracking back hard and they're taking away the pass across the Royal Road, and you can get out and challenge and be sound on it, you're going to have success, and that builds. Now, if your teammates take off and you've got wide open lanes, the next time you back up a little more, then you get beat on the clean one, it just mm-hmm. becomes an unraveled mess. I saw it with the New York Rangers all season long. Nobody gave up more high danger chances than the New York Rangers. Nobody gave up more east to west chances than the New York Rangers. So what Kemper has been able to do is then through December up until right now, with that confidence, just play at his highest level. And the way that LA defends, everything that we have within our, you know, model and looking at data supports LA as a top five defensive team in every single metric. And Edmonton was last year top five. And the most important stat that we've seen that's been able to be predictive is shutting down the rush game for your opponent in the playoffs, not giving up the big odd man rush chances. And nobody's been better at shutting it down than the LA Kings, even over the last 3 or 4 years. But now they've added wrinkles to their offense. And I give Jim Hiller a lot of credit. He's a very progressive coach, and he's allowed the LA players to play with those offensive instincts that I talked about in front of the net, being able to make extra plays.
So your old pal Chris Knobloch is going to be on the phone any day now and say, okay, my dilemma is Calvin Pickard versus Stu Skinner. Is there any evidence that it should be Pickard?
Geez, John, that's a good one. Yes and no, but I think that Edmonton's in tough with both guys right now, and it's not just on the goalie. Edmonton, I don't have it in front of me, but I know last year they were fourth in defending off the rush, and this year they're around 18-19. And since the Four Nations, I think they were 28th. So I think that Edmonton, where they're defending right now and what their goalies are facing, and I think we're going to see a series where LA is making plays in front of Skinner that Skinner wants them to shoot it and they won't, because they know to move Skinner is to their advantage. Even when we could be watching the game and saying, why isn't he shoot it? I think we'll see a lot of slam dunk goals.
I know we're focused on goaltending, but is there a way to quantify the loss of Matthias Ekholm?
Boy,
his absence?
I would say that. So I don't have that in front of me.
I think that
overall what you're again trying to accomplish is an environment for your goalie that's predictable, and you're spending fewer minutes in your own zone. You're not allowing the east to west chance, but certainly I know that Ekholm's loss, to me, I'll just give you my own opinion on it. When I saw him go down, I thought that would be bigger than losing one of McDavid or Draisaitl. That's what I thought. I thought that if you were going to choose one of the three guys, I would actually leave Ekholm in my lineup. And if I had to remove one of the other two guys, as ridiculous as that sounds, that's how important Ekholm is to his goalie environment.
All right, you're getting another chance to pick a goalie to start. And it's here in Toronto. Is it Stolarz or Wall?
Oh, it's definitely Stolarz. So I'm a big fan of Stolarz coming into the season. He was ranked real high on our model from last season when he was in Florida. Oh, I spent a lot of my time this summer on him. I also, John, every morning during the season, just about, I'm on the ice for an hour and a half, 2 hours. In the summer, I'm on the ice for 5 hours every day during the week. I have goalies coming on my ears here in Connecticut, but it's also a chance for me to get in the video room, show them guys, what are their tendencies? Why are they good? And what I really liked about Stolarz coming into the season, now he lost this during March from just coming back from his injury and then getting going after the Four Nations. He was getting really wide in his stance, and his Leaf logo was touching the top of his pads. His posture was down. He was getting beat high. And in his last three starts, he's right back to where I like to see him. His feet are back under him. He's big. He's got posture. I think what we're trying to aim to gauge with our goalies before the playoffs begin is, do they have timing and do they have posture? And timing would be being able to pause your computer screen and seeing the puck halfway between where it left the shooter's stick and before it reaches the goalie, and the goalie's still staying there waiting for him, silent and big with posture, not hunched over making themselves small. Right now he's right back to where he was at the beginning of the season. I touched base with one of his old goalie coaches before the year, Sadar Shamiraj, who's now in Anaheim, and he told me about how Stolarz, during the time that he went through Edmonton and Philadelphia before Anaheim picked him up in a trade, he went to visit him in New Jersey. His injured leg that he was rehabbing from his knee during those two seasons there with Philadelphia and Edmonton was a third in diameter smaller than his healthy leg. He had essentially played on one leg for 2 years. This guy's always been a good goalie. He just wasn't healthy.
Well, I remember watching him in London. And when he played for the Knights for Dale, yeah. And he was an unbelievable athlete, but had no style, absolutely no style. Mm-hmm. And it really has taken him this long to develop a style, hasn't it?
Yeah, and he has game. Like, I mean, he's a guy that the highest compliment I could give an NHL goalie is that you're in the top five for my video all summer. Like, this is what I'm showing the kids. You know, This is how you beat a pass. I mean, his game last night, that wasn't a fluff game. That was 10 high danger chances that he faced in that game. He had a lot of high danger. I watched it this morning. I was like, yep, this guy's back. And I'm excited. Like, my rooting interest, guys, hockey wise, of course, it's with the Rangers. It's with the Islanders, the teams I played for. I've always cheered for Edmonton, too. I like to see them have success. But, I mean, number one, my baby's still the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, that's where I grew up. I was a kid. You know, like, I was every Saturday night I watched Don Cherry with my father and watched the game. And I had content coming out of my ears. But, you know, I want to see the Leafs win. And I'm excited for their opportunity because Stolarz, He has been consistent this year with the exception of a blip during March, and he's right back to where he was when he was at his best. And I think that, again, when you're trying to evaluate two guys, who do we use? It's who has their timing, who has their posture, who has their best positioning before those two things happen, and who's moving well through the crease. And you can say that some of those elements are physical, some are technical, some are mental. I think he's got the full package right now.
Who has the advantage between Ullmark and Toronto, given that Linus has faced Toronto a couple of times? Now, didn't go great, but they know each other.
I have bias against Linus only because I had heard a bunch of horror stories about his behavior in Buffalo before he got to Boston, then how hard it was for him to acclimate in Boston. And I'm talking about just not always being available, not always playing through stuff. And it took him a while to get accepted in Boston. And I said before the year, he was going to give Travis Green fits with just not always being. A nice way to put it is that I think he lacks confidence when he's pressed up against it. Pressure-wise, if he's not playing well, he finds a way to get out of games. My prediction for the series is that he doesn't play in all seven if it goes seven. Either his play takes him out of the net, or, you know, he's got a groin or a back, or it's just always something. And until I see him fight through all those things, it's hard for. And look, I know he's a Ferrari. I mean, if he got hot in a series, he could be incredible. He's highly talented. He's always been right there at the top of our list. But I just find that he finds a way to get out of too many games. And that's a quality that I don't think he has. So that's why I think the advantage is in net for Toronto.
Good time to take a break. We'll come back and work our way through the rest of the series that we know have been determined on 100% Hockey with the Goalie Guru. I share that title with Kevin Woodley, but Stephen Valiquette, he's like elite stuff here.
Definitely Woody.
100% Hockey with Gerard and Shannon.
I don't know. Benoit might be on line three. Benoit might be the original goalie guru.
100%. We've got some good ones.
Let it go to call waiting. That's it. Yeah. We'll be right back.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
John, did you get Benoit's message? He's not happy with you.
Yes. No, Benoit's not happy right now. Actually, that's not true. I have never seen Benoit angry in all the time I've been around Benoit. He's always got a great demeanor. So,
yeah, really? he was so funny. Yeah, our first. Do I have a puck here, John? This was our first. My first speech with Benoit Allaire. He holds the puck up. Valley, what is this? I'm like, oh, Benny, it's a puck. No, Valley, this is a question. You have to provide the answer.
So I just a total aside, I got to know Benoit because my son went to his camp.
Your son was a goalie.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
my,
boy.
That was a goalie. So, and he went to Benoit's camp in Saint-Eustache for 5 years. So, and I looked forward to going there and sitting in the stands, and Benoit would come up and we'd chat. And
yep.
I had more fun for those 5 summers. It was fantastic.
I actually went up there too, John. After I went to Russia, I went to his camp with the kids, with the junior kids. Like, I had no ego that way. And he was thrilled. You know, he's like, Valley, none of my pro guy have ever come to my camp. Thank you so much. I loved it. I did the demos. Like, I had no problem with that. It was fun.
And by the way, I mean, this is ages ago, and he still remembers my son's name. That's what the kind of person he is. He still remembers my son's name, and that was, gosh, now 20 years ago. So it's cool.
You know what, guys, and John, this is that year that I was talking about, the 04-05 lockout year. Do you want to know why we were so great that year? We had this great team, but LaBarbera and I had this great experience. Benoit did not have to be with us that year. He could have stayed in New York in his luxury apartment, but he was on the ice with us every day, 30 minutes before practice, 40 minutes after practice. That was the year I learned how to become a goalie, which is why I love player development. It happened to me. Benoit happened to me. And I think that when I look at the defense that we did provide ourselves with, the environment, but having Benoit there, that's why I know there's such a missing ingredient with most NHL teams right now. They don't have the player development that they should. My first goalie coach, guys, I ever had for a full season in the minors was that year. I was 27. That was our first full year that we had a goalie coach, was Benoit there, because he was so unselfish.
I don't want to get too off track, but what did he work on with you tactically or save selection wise that got you through that?
I would say Benoit is the master of positioning. So it was all about, for me, backing up. I was big and I was over challenging off the rush. So it's a much longer push across, and he brought me back, and in a way, through our practice, gave me confidence to play deep. If I didn't learn how to play deep, I would have had no shot. I never would have played a game in the NHL. I had to back up. And he did the same thing for Henrik. When Henrik came over from Sweden, guys, he was very aggressive. And Benny got him to back up and believe in it. And positioning and movement were the two things. Like, you should have seen how much we skated, Darren. We skated like you wouldn't believe. Like, after every practice, crease movements for 30 minutes. But Benny... man, he was, if it wasn't for him, I'm certainly not talking to you guys right now.
He's a great man. Okay, let's get back on track here. Carolina, New Jersey. Carolina, to me, is always going to be a question mark in goal, even though Freddie Anderson is Freddie Anderson, but there's some consistency. I mean, it's funny you say that about Ullmark. I have the same feeling about Anderson sometimes that you might have about Ullmark. Yeah. And then Jacob Markstrom. I mean, there's a ton of pressure on Jacob Markstrom, who quite frankly, has not had a very good playoff resume anymore he's played.
This series is a wild card for me, and I mean wild, where I think we're going to see all four goalies. That's how wild I think this series is going to be. Markstrom, I want to start by saying I've always loved Markstrom. And this goes back to Dan Cloutier calling me 7 or 8 years ago saying, Valley, do you have any data to support Markstrom? They want to trade him. And I'm like, Dan, he's like in the top 15 in almost every one of our categories, breakaways. Like, I'm showing him all the video. He takes that support and he stays in Vancouver. So I want to tell you that the conversation I was having earlier about Stolarz getting wide and low, that's exactly where Markstrom is. I've never seen his posture so bad. I've never seen him so wide and spread out, and he's fighting everything. And I think they're going to start him because Allen slipped a little bit in the last few weeks, but Allen was really taking over the net. And I know that Markstrom has to be the guy because he's your number one and he's the one you're paying, but I don't think it's going to go well for him. He's not himself right now. Posture, timing is really bad, and he's just very leaky, and he's not himself. That's all. And he's got to get his feet back under him and bring his posture back up. I know we're on camera and the people that are listening can't see this, but if you look at my hand and you see that would be like the chest angle of the goalie, and this would be his backside. He's got to play here, and right now he's playing small, wow, and he's playing in his second
he's
set.
Hunched over.
Hunched over.
Why does he do that? Why do goalies default to that?
Okay, so it's one of two things. It's either fatigue, which could be, because I can tell you that at the end of my Sudbury Wolves season, I played 61 games out of 66, and I went to the East Coast League after that season. And if I showed you pictures from my Dayton Bombers, my debut in the East Coast Hockey League, you wouldn't even believe it. You would have thought I was 5'6". I was so crunched over. What was I doing? But I know what I was doing. I was so friggin' tired that I was trying to get closer to the puck. And to do that, my posture was crap, because I'm just trying to fight and battle and get close to the puck. And that can happen. Now, that can also happen when you're just not seeing the puck well. You don't feel good about yourself. So I think Markey's just like digging in so much that he's getting lower, 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 and more spread out, because he's a big body. And when big bodies crouch down further, they just get bigger armholes. A lot are going through his arms, 6 and 7 hole. On the other side of the ledger with Carolina, I couldn't believe this about this team this year. They've always been so good defensively for the last 5 years. And this year, remarkably, they've given up the most breakaways. They've been giving up the most off the rush. I can't even believe how leaky they've been giving it up the other way. It's not even their style. It's almost like I think the core group of this team is a little fed up with, just to say it this way, it won't sound great, but maybe we're kind of finished with playing the way that Rod Brindamore wants us to play, and we want to just do it ourselves and open it up because it hasn't worked, and now we want to go this way. But I think this is going to lean to them having a hard time getting through. I don't see Carolina getting through, but it's a funny matchup because I don't love maybe both teams in this series, you know, and whoever don't goes through will
Carolina
lose in the next
lost
one.
A couple of pretty good Carolina lost a pretty good couple of good defensemen last summer. You know, they haven't been the yeah. same, you know, when you think about it.
Yep, 100%.
That defensive style you're talking about, when you think of Shea and Pecci, they're not there anymore, right?
Yeah, they're giving up a lot, and it was surprising. They've also, in the past, been a team that just shoots to recover pucks and keeps going after volume. So typically the goalies they play against, and that's been the case again this year, they can get hot too. Like, they're a fun team to play against. The best games I've ever seen Lundqvist play and Shesterkin have been against Carolina over the last 10 years, just getting fed lots of nice feelers.
Do you like the Pyotr Kochetkov poke check?
I refer to it as a hope check, because I don't think he likes himself on breakaways. And like, I know that one. When I wasn't feeling good on breakaways, I just throw the poke. But it was a hope check, because I don't want to play you straight up because I think you're going to beat me. So I'm just going to hope it. And that's my feeling on that one.
What about Bobrovsky versus Vasilevsky? Is this kind of like Christmas Day?
Yeah, so, geez, Bob's always been so funny. He's the one goalie over the last 10 years that you feel like you can just flick a switch and he can play hot. And he's never been predictable. He's had some of the most wildest swings year to year where he's been really good or really bad during this entire contract and during his playoff runs. Like, his playoff runs, he's been really good. And he turns it on. So with Bob, it's like roll the dice with him. I never know what to expect. So I don't think there's a lot of predictive. Like, he's the one guy, and I mean the one guy, that his regular season just doesn't correlate and carry over to the postseason. Wow. Where Vasilevsky, for the last probably 3 months, he's been one of the top goalies in the NHL, and it's been sneaky quiet. The one reason why I'm worried about Tampa, same reason why I'm worried about Carolina, they're giving up a lot off the rush. Like, I want to share this with you guys because this is why I always lean on rush. First of all, 40% of goals are scored during the regular season off the rush. 40% of all goals in the NHL are scored off the rush. In the playoffs, that number only drops to 39%. So it's not like the rush game goes away.
I thought it would drop a lot more.
So did I, Darren. Like, that's why I do these. Like, I, you know, we have data scientists and stuff, and we've got all this data. We have 34 points of data for every shot that hits the net. So I have to look at all things. And of course, predictive stuff is the most interesting to me. Offensive zone play during the regular season It is 35% of all goals are scored in the offensive zone coming off setups. So rolling up top or low to high cycles. Mm-hmm. In the postseason, it drops to 32%. So it actually does drop off the offensive zone that is structured. But the interesting one here is the unsettled offense. So when you're in the offensive zone, and let's say that your opponent gets the puck, but you forecheck them or you grab it on a giveaway or a takeaway, the teams that are successful are, in last year, Florida led the NHL in this stat. The teams that are successful east to west do it off of unsettled offense, meaning it's coming off a turnover. It's before you got D-zone structure. That's the best time to go east to west and to seam a team. It's not when you can see the whites of their eyes and you're looking up ice and trying to go right through the box. You're not doing it, like not in the NHL. But as soon as the D turn, as soon as the skates turn towards their own goalie, usually on a giveaway or a takeaway or off a forecheck, then you can really go east to west and have that success. Only 5% of all goals during the regular season are scored off faceoffs, and it's 6% in the postseason. Unsettled offense, though, I think is the most important number when we're talking about getting in and being able to create offense in setups. And last season, the top three teams in that were Colorado, Edmonton, Florida. This year, it's Colorado, Tampa Bay, Edmonton. So for what it's worth, Toronto scored 91 goals this year off of unsettled offense. That's 18th. Anaheim was last with 73 goals on unsettled offense. And sometimes you might even say, like, that's hustle offense, isn't it? Tracking back and making plays on players that think they're kind of in the clear.
So unsettled is different than a broken play?
So unsettled would be like, if we're looking at the situations of hockey, broken play would be a chance. Like, that's the chance itself, right? But let's back it up and let's say, what are the situations of hockey? So the situations of hockey would be a clean rush, a transition rush, offensive zone play when we're in structure. Unsettled offense would be anything like off of a forecheck, a chance. Any chance that comes off a forecheck comes off of a giveaway, a takeaway. Most of them come off the back check. So those are all unsettled plays because they turn fast. Like you don't have clear possession during that time. And the other one's faceoffs. But the shot itself can be a broken play. And that's the difference. It's looking at the situation versus the shooting chance. So the shooting chance right there and the broken play would be.
But the genesis of those plays is in the offensive zone or in the neutral zone?
Well, the transition is happening in the neutral zone. So you're feeling a rush and then you stop it and you go the other way. Yeah, that would be a transition rush. And the transition rush, guys, and the rush, those have been the most predictive. And this is, I think this is neat. It's a little bit of numbers, but I won't bore you here, but it's worth it because over the last 6 years, every really good team that we've covered during the regular season, they seem to fail in the postseason because they don't understand the value of defending off the rush. They want to play free and they want to play loose and they think they can win their way until they smarten up the next year and then shut down the rush game against them because they've been burned by it. So if you look at the last six Stanley Cup champions, this is really fascinating. The year before the St. Louis Blues won their Stanley Cup in 2019, they were 19th in rush defense. They went to fifth and they won. Tampa Bay, when they lost that year against Columbus, they were 27th in rush defense. That was their only weakness that year that they had that amazing President's Trophy season. They lost to Columbus four straight. Columbus was 9th in rush defense. So they were shutting it and then going the other way and transitioning. But Tampa Bay, when they won, they were 4th and they were 2nd during their two cups. So they, and I always say this, guys, the hardest thing to get your star players to do is to buy into defending. But defending still wins. Defending still wins. Colorado went from 12th at defending off the rush to 2nd when they won. Vegas was 20th, and then they went to 4th. And then Florida last year went from 10th the previous year to 5th. And if you go to Florida 3 years ago, when they won the President's Trophy, they had the number one rush team offensively in the league. And last year when they won, they were 32nd. Like, they chose not to play off the rush because they knew, like St. Louis knew in 2019, that they weren't built to play that way. And St. Louis was also a 32nd place team off the rush offensively when they won in 19. And what they chose to do was, even I've talked to their coaching staff about this, at that time, they'd have a 3-on-2 and they'd dump it in because they knew they were better just lugging it down there, wearing them down, low to high, pucks and bodies to the net, and just meat and potatoing it.
That's the Brett Hull with Ken Hitchcock in 1999 in practice. I'm just going to dump it in when they were doing line rushes.
just to mock them.
Get off the ice, Hull. Get off the ice. Hey, Bob and Vassy, that's got to impact the Olympics next year. If Bob beats them 2 years in a row, do you think that means anything for the Olympics starting job?
If they're in the Olympics.
I'll say this before I get to that question because I don't want to skate past this one. I think it's really important that some of these teams have played their goalies too much this year, especially with a condensed schedule and with the four nations. And that includes
Connor Hellebuck's at the top of the list.
That's who I'm about to say, John.
Yeah.
Hellebuck's played too much. Vasilevsky's played too much. We've seen two guys in the last 20 years play 60 or more games and win a Stanley Cup. It was Marc-Andre Fleury and it was Jonathan Quick. And that's it. Nobody's playing these amount of games, especially now. So that's where if Vasilevsky or Hellebuck happens to win a Stanley Cup this year, I'll eat my words, but I don't see it. I don't see it. Not with this year, not with this schedule.
I do a lot of work in Winnipeg on radio, Steve, and I have been a broken record all year long.
Too many
don't
games.
Get them to 60. Don't get them to 60. And they think I'm nuts.
Why are they doing it?
I don't know.
John, look at his hockey DB. The guy's played like 60. He's played 6 seasons now with 60 or more games.
Yeah, yeah. And you, I guarantee you, with the way you describe the way St. Louis plays and what he's going to do, at some point you're going to say, "Oh, he's tired."
Yeah, he's tired. And in St. Louis, I think they're one of the smarter teams in the league, guys. Like how they take information and use it. And they know that I'll tell you right now what they're going to do. They'll be moving the puck below the goal line, and he'll be in a reverse VH, down, 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 wearing him down, go up top, screen, yeah. So he's in his crouch. He's going to get beat up.
Yeah. Okay, before we let you go, three guys I want to talk about. Ottinger, Blackwood, obviously, is a pretty good matchup. Two big goaltenders.
Mm-hmm.
The amateur goalie and analyst that I am, I give the edge to Jake Ottinger.
You used the word obviously there. I'm surprised.
yes, I do. I think Ottinger's, I still remember him against Calgary in that playoff series when he was so young.
Yeah.
So where do you see those two guys?
So I disagree. I actually have Ottinger. Yeah. I respectfully disagree.
Oh yeah, there you go. Obviously, you do.
I have Ottinger really low here, and I think because of Colorado's rush, Ottinger ranks really bad in rush save percentage. Like I mean, really bad. One of the worst. Actually, you know what? I have him as the worst in the NHL. among all the goalies that'll be of the 16 starters going into the playoffs. So I think he's going to get beat up. And you know what I think? This is my prediction that you see DeSmith, because DeSmith is one of the top 5 goalies off the rush. In fact, I said earlier that when I work with NHL goalies, everybody's got a big ego. So I got to be careful, right? So when I'm presenting something, I will say something like, John, who do you think is the best rush goalie in save percentage over the last 5 years? And whatever goalie might say, Vasilevsky or what have you, it's Casey DeSmith. And I've got the video and I'll show them why. Look at his backwards flow. He's got great squareness. He's amazing on the shot. He's had 52 east to west. He's only allowed 3. Like I'll show all the stats to back up the video. But the goalies are always very surprised. Casey DeSmith is sneaky. Now, he's had a couple little slippage here in the last couple of weeks where he's had a couple, at least one start where I was like, But I'm telling you, I see Ottinger getting chased a little bit in this one. And I think we see DeSmith because DeSmith's that good in a matchup against that particular opponent. Blackwood, The one thing that makes me nervous about Blackwood, when you review goals on him, he oftentimes loses his net. And it's you feel weird saying that about an NHL goalie, but he does. Like, when he gets scored on, it's because he's either off angle or he's lost his squareness. And squareness, I mean the toe caps of his skates wrapped around the puck as if he's hugging it. He gets off kilter, and then it can open up his shoulders. And I'm a little surprised by that. But if I was laying it down, I'd say that Colorado wins that series, and Ottinger's not a big part of the storyline.
Ottinger did beat Colorado last year.
I don't care because of the way he's played this year.
Okay.
I don't like him. I just don't. Since the beginning of the season, he hasn't had it. And another look at his stance, Darren, tell me, and you can text me, tell me how wide you think he is. I think he's way too wide to be able to play a game that's moving east to west right now, because he gets stuck and he goes down early. He gets spread out. I don't know what's happened to his game, but I'm not, of all the number ones, I'm probably most concerned with Markstrom and Ottinger in the first round.
Finally, Michael, the last guy I want to talk to, you need to talk about Vegas.
Well, Aiden Hill wanted to get to 50 starts and he got there. That was a goal of his, and he stayed healthy all year. He's a Stanley Cup champion. He's going to actually start, Stephen. This is an amazing. It's going to be the first time that he ever plays in the game one of a Stanley Cup playoff run.
Oh, no way.
Because he's always come off the bench. In 2023, right, he was in the second round against Edmonton. Last year, he came in mid-round against Dallas. So he's going to be the guy from the very start for the first time, which is crazy to think. But he's going to go against Gustafson.
That surprises me. I actually, I know that his playoff numbers have been terrific.
But he's always been hurt going in.
Oh, was last year hurt going in? Because I missed that one.
Logan started and then they switched five games in.
Okay. So with him, I think it's a fascinating story because when I went and looked at his playoff numbers from when he won the Stanley Cup, he had 16 breakaways. He allowed zero goals. And his east to west, I'm going from memory, it was really high. It was mid-20s, and he only gave up two or three. What I think about Aiden is that for a big guy that moves to the crease, not as smooth as a Carey Price, but he gets through his own way. He always seems to find the middle of the net. And most importantly, he keeps his posture. When he's at his best, I like him as I can frame it this way. I wish I played more like him. You know, he just keeps it together better for a guy that finds his middle of net different than the really smooth skater. But he always seems to find middle of net. I also think that a big piece of his success has to do with how well Vegas can defend. And
yes.
Vegas, when I was looking at those time and space chances from the high danger chances, it's right here, actually, this paper. The three best teams at defending against time and space on high danger chances, I think this is really important. It's Winnipeg, Vegas, LA. You know, the worst teams in the NHL aren't going to surprise you. They're all non-playoff teams. Nashville, Pittsburgh, Anaheim, Calgary, Buffalo, Philadelphia, San Jose, New York. Like, that's where we're at right now. I just feel like we're looking at really good goalies in every net. We really are. But the differentiator can be the enhancement of having more time and space with your really good scoring chances. It's a big difference. And look, I covered the best goalie arguably in the league, and he got lit up, guys. He got beat up. He gave up this year, going back to his Vezina season, where he was about one goal every 4.7 high danger, which is a really good number. He was one every 3.5 this year. But it's a difference of 32 goals just on his high danger chances or grade A's. But that's 32 goals over a season. I'm just saying that the environment matters so much more than I think that we give it a lot of credit to. And that's why Aiden, playing in a good environment where, you know, guys aren't coming in with time and space, they're getting, you know, clamped down on, I think that's going to help him with the way that he understands his game.
Final guy I want to talk about is, he may not be in the playoffs, but it's a hell of a story, and that's Jed Greif.
Oh, I prepared for you. I thought you were coming at me with this one, John. So I watched his game last night. I'm so proud of this kid. All right. Now, Before I go there, we have a way to keep, like, John, when you were watching your son play, some nights you'd say, you know, he stole us the game. Or you could say, you know, the team bailed him out. Or you could say he played great or he played average, right? Well, we have a way of doing that so we can come to basically five different, game styles that you can say that happened. And we come to a positive game percentage based on this guy's played this many great games, this many quality games, this many average, this many bad games, or he's blown this many. Elvis Merzlikins, his game percentage, when you put him in the net this year, for him to have a positive game, he was the worst starting goalie in the NHL this year. 55% of the time, he had a positive performance. And Greaves right now, okay, now he's played 10 games. The guy's 90%. He's played 9 out of 10 games. He's had a real positive performance. And last night's shutout, he faced 10 high danger chances. Like, that's a stolen win. So I'm looking at his game, and now I'm watching the video, and I'm like, man, he reminds me a lot. He's got a lot of Dustin Wolf in him. He's smooth.
6 feet.
Not, right? He's not that big. But, man, and I think a big thing is when you're going through the crease right now, modern day, when you can see a goalie that can double shuffle and never lose squareness when they're going east to west, that's a huge advantage to a guy that's got to open up his skate and then close again. Darren, you know when somebody's going east to west on you, that feeling of like you're opening the door and, God, I don't have enough time to close it before they shoot?
Panic.
Of course. I know it too. But Greaves is really smooth and solid east to west. And I mean, he was in the middle of the net all night. So it doesn't matter how big you are if you can achieve middle of the net sooner than a big guy that may be coming across on his knees. You know what I mean? Like doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Size doesn't matter. We're not seeing
Wolf is my favorite guy to watch now. And it's not even close. Darren Elliott and I did the game last night, the Vegas Calgary game, and we were both looking at each other all night.
Oh, good to see. Right.
That's so cool. And
everything he does. I admire everything he does.
He stays on his feet sometimes. He's down. Yep. He's quick. He's everything. And you're right. Jet has a lot of those same qualities. He's people are going to wonder, why wasn't he up?
You know why? It takes so much longer for small guys to prove they can play. That's just what it is. It's always been that way. You look at Wolf's record. Are you kidding me? This guy was a star in the WHL, a star in the American League. Why should anybody be surprised he's a star in the NHL right now? He's done it everywhere. And Jet, I was talking to an NHL goalie coach about this a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about how NHL goalies receive the play. It's not a individual position, like you could say my son who is a pitcher or a quarterback. They're also individuals within a team sport, but you can't compare them because they drive play, we receive the play. And again, when you're seeing Jet, he said the closest thing to a goalie in the NHL is a batter in baseball. And you can measure a goalie the same way you can measure a batter's hands. When the ball leaves the pitcher, it would be about at the halfway point before the first sign of you're seeing a very confident hitter move his hands. And that's what Greaves was last night. I'm watching him. I'm like, my God, I'm pausing the puck. And he's just sitting there like a statue standing on his feet. And the puck is almost beyond that halfway point. And I'm like, that's patience. Boy, oh boy. Like that's patience you can count on for it to continue. And that's why we love Wolf, because he's the same.
A lot of us do have the same patience, but we never end up moving. We always just stay
well, right. You just don't see the puck. You just don't see the puck. That's all.
Well, to your point, you know, there was a goal that Kyle Connor scored from above the top of the circles on Demko 2 weeks ago. And I was doing a goal review on it and it went 5-hole, but the puck was beyond that halfway point. Demko was trying to be patient and still be there, but you know, then he was late.
Yeah.
And that's the yin and the yang for us.
Woodley has talked to you a few times and he just absolutely raves about you. He loves you. And I've never had a chance to do this with you. And I was giddy about it. And it's lived up and exceeded every expectation. That's so cool to lean on you, because you break it down and you offer from, if you're a goaltender, it's great. If you're not a goaltender, there's so much information there. Stephen, this is cool.
My pleasure, guys. Anytime. Remember,
yeah,
I'm a fan first. So when you guys call, I answer.
And Emmys. Look at those Emmys.
Hold on. So, just one thing. When you were that Leaf fan, was it Curtis Joseph or Eddie Belfour?
So when I was there, well, when I was a child, it was Felix the Cat Poffan.
Oh, it was Felix. Okay.
Yeah, right. It was Felix. Wow. He was on my wall. And then I actually ended up playing with him when I was with the Islanders. So it was a real thrill. Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was a real thrill. You know,
do you have a picture with him?
I don't. I do not. Should have. But you know what? You know what's really weird, guys? When you go to the NHL, you feel like you're in the television and you're trying to sometimes like, no, you're trying to brush it off because it's distracting. Yeah. You know, it's very distracting. If you're a big fan and then you actually play a game, it's really distracting. Listen, my first game, quick story. Benoit Hogue, I get called up and I get thrown into a game. We're in Phoenix and Benoit Hogue is about to take a shot on me, but I have him in my rotisserie pool. And for a quick thought, I'm saying my buddies would love it if I just let this in right now and I could get a few points. But like, I had to like knock it off. I'm saying to myself, focus, like now here, you know, because you could go there sometimes. I remember playing against John LeClair. He had this really strange curve.
Yeah.
And the first shot of the game in Philadelphia, Darren, I look to my right just to see who's coming out of the corner, and I see his curve. I'm like, Jesus, that's strange. And then I look up, and it's John Clear, and the shot's coming. And I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I gotta get focused here. You know, it's a funny thing. Like, I was so hockey obsessed as a youngster that you know, turning it off when I finally turned pro was a challenge sometimes.
That thing was like a canoe paddle, that John LeClair stick.
It turned twice. Yeah, two curves on it. And by the way, that was the first shot of the game. It goes off his stick, hits the side of the net. I'm almost down one like 30 seconds into the game because I couldn't believe whose stick that was, and it's John LeClair. I'm like, what am I doing?
That's great. Thanks, buddy. Hey, enjoy the playoffs.
Thanks, Steven.
But anytime, guys. Take care.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
I'm a doodler. You guys know that. I'm looking down and I draw different pictures and faces. Today I took nothing but notes. And I realized about a third of the way into our conversation that I'm going to have to go back and listen to that discussion two or three times. There's so much information there. And if you're a commentator covering the Stanley Cup playoffs in studio or an analyst, you should listen to that because there's so much. Am I right?
This wasn't a podcast. This was a TED Talks.
It was. You're right. But if you're in the TNT studio or if you're in the Sportsnet studio, there's so much in there that you can piggyback off of.
Well, I must admit, I do have an affection for goaltenders. And everybody that knows my career
I have always hired goaltenders, so there's there's just something about them that I think they see the game differently. And I am not an analytics guy. And the one thing I can tell you about what Steve does is Steve makes analytics a little more manageable for me.
Yes.
And that's, I think that's one of the key things, because you have to remember who you're speaking to. And most of the unwashed public don't understand analytics. And so that, I think that that's an important part of his job.
I like it because it's not just opinion. There's so much data to back it up.
No, there's too much data sometimes.
I like the data. Sometimes you would just like the phrase to not include a number, if you can find a way. I understand that part. But
I tell you what, we can have that discussion another day, because my fear in our business, in the television world, is we are making the sport all numbers and not enough personality. And that is a real challenge when it comes to producing television. Okay. Because we want people at home to know about people and not necessarily numbers. And the thing is, it's harder to talk to people than it is to look at a piece of paper with numbers.
But that's where you need somebody to balance it out. Either the host with Valley to do it, and they do a good job there, or another analyst. And to me, that would work. You're the producer, but would that work?
I'm not sure. I mean, we'll talk about it on Friday. Let's talk about it on Friday.
Do some TV talk going to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Oh, who? Why?
Ron McLean on Friday.
Oh, I thought you just wanted to do some, like, what are the studio shows going to look like?
Well, we can do that.
We're actually going to have a host on that can navigate things, unlike you and
Perhaps. Well, I thought the host yesterday navigated the show brilliantly.
Bye, Jonathan.
Cheers. Well, don't do that.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.